That's okay. I think he'll pick it up no matter. If I'm in the general vicinity, I'm sure it'll probably work. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. My name is Beverly Best. I teach in the Department of Sociology and Anthropology at Concordia University. And welcome to this, the capitalism panel of Sound Vision Action. Two speakers for this panel. Our first speaker is Mike Curran, who's an artist and also teaches at the Institute of Art, Design and Technology, Dublin. Mark is also a visiting professor in the visual and media anthropology at the Freie Universität Berlin. And our second speaker is Sumant Gopinath, associate professor of music theory in the University of Minnesota. And we'll start off with Mark, and I'll wait. Mark, the title of Mark's talk is The Normalization of Deviance and the Construction of the Market.
Okay. First to say thank you very much, Bev. It's important to acknowledge, so I also want to say sincere thanks to Tamar, to Nick, and to Jonathan and Mary and the team for Media McGill for this kind invitation. So merci beaucoup, really. I appreciate the opportunity. It's also nice to be back in Montreal. I lived as a migrant in Western Canada in the 1980s. And then actually, a project I'm going to reference today, The Breathing Factory, was shown in Dazibao here in Montreal in 2006. So it's good to be back. I just want to also say that Mary Kindsley photographed or photocopied a resource list, propaganda on my part. So if you're interested, there are some copies at the end at the front, if you're interested in terms of sort of reading material in relation to what I'm going to talk about today. Just to lay out a little bit, I intend to read a little bit, but primarily speak to about what's being presented in terms of a format. As somebody who thinks a lot about the role of the photograph, I think also a lot about representation. And there's a relationship even to this role of capital, because I would argue one of the primary functions of capital is to think about actually its functioning regarding abstraction. So because of that, I continue to think a lot about that idea around representation and photographic representation. So the kinds of frames, what I'd understand is sort of a critically reflexive practice that draws from anthropology and ethnography. And to think about that has become something that's sort of more hybrid, more expansive in terms of its format, of its to incorporate sort of photographs, video, text, that's become more sort of installation in terms of really what it is as a representation strategy. It's ideas around multivocality, it's montage, primarily that sort of drives its both its format and its formulation. Okay. So I have never been to New York, other than John F. Kennedy Airport. So, but I'm beginning by an image, obviously, for some American art. This is the New York Stock Exchange in Wall Street. And just to maybe as a slight preamble to what I'm going to talk about, that I would argue that the global economic crash we experienced in 2007 in Ireland and Iceland, 2008 for the rest of the world, sort of the pre-existence for those conditions of that of that crash, and that really what we're witnessing is the amplification, the extreme amplification of those conditions. That actually there is possibly an existential, if we can use that word, crisis in terms of capitalism. But actually the crisis I'm primarily concerned with and drives in terms of thinking is around social democracy, ideas of citizenship, and actually the crisis regarding the social contract. That actually capitalism is evolving. And sort of in that evolution of capitalism, that actually it's become openly illusionary. I would argue now that really capitalism is now openly illusionary. Really what's driving matters now is actually what's keeping the boat afloat is the world's central banks in terms of the money that they're printing. So Marx had, you know, demanded or sort of asserted that capital seeks that everything is recreated in its image. And I would argue in terms of neoliberal financial capitalism that it seeks everything, and I mean everything, in its image, to be recreated in its image. So in that context, that the market, while demanding in many ways the removal of the nation state, then seeks the nation state simultaneously to save it. So there's this internal sort of oxymoron, this internal discrepancy between away with the state, but then the state must save us, and ultimately then us as citizens, because all of you, all of us then are the bearers of that debt. And that continues. So when in such a context then, it's to think a little bit about the notion then of a counter-narrative, or Saskia Sassen would talk about a counter-globality, to think about ideas of power and studying up, the effect then in terms as a researcher, as an activist. And I borrow here too, particularly from Karen Ho, anthropologist at the University of Minnesota, where it is, and her ideas too, the role of optics, the role of theatre, the role of performance and the economy of appearances. Excuse me. So, before I just very much, that was the preamble and begin, in the context of austerity, I think it's important to acknowledge the supporters of this project. My partner on this project has been the curator and now director of Fire Station Artist Studios in Dublin, Helen Carey. But the project has been funded and supported by the Arts Council of Ireland, Belfast Exposed, the Gallery Photography Arts Council of Northern Ireland, CCA Derry, Londonderry, Palace Projects, and the Limerick City Gallery of Art. And I think it's important in the context where I think last year the Ministry of Arts in Portugal was closed within 24 hours. So there's a direct relationship in terms of the functioning of capital and sort of cultural funding. In 1945, the average US stock was held for 6 years. In 2000, the average US stock was held for 6 months. By 2011, the average US stock was held for 14 seconds. So what we're talking about here is actually a compression of time and space, and that actually primarily the neoliberal moment, the financial capital moment, is now. It's always now, 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 and that notion of chasing alpha, chasing zero, sort of to reduce the compression of time and space. So within that context, I want to talk about a project today, and I woke up very early this morning, partly because of jet lag. And I got thinking that really I'm presenting a project that's slightly already a bit out of date. Yeah. So what I'm going to talk about today, I already realize is, and I've been sort of engaged in dealing with this sort of work for the last 16 years in terms of thinking about the functioning of flows and migrations of global capital, is that even the infrastructure I've begun to look at over this past 3 years regarding this project is already dated. That it's already open to its own abstraction through the very technology that it's evolved. So in some ways, what I want to imagine while I'm talking today around the linear nature of the PowerPoint is I want you to imagine shadows. Because in some ways, the regulation and the sort of focus that there's been a lot of talk about since 2007 and 8, focus on structures and buildings and on things like banks and financial institutions. But all of that has already moved into the shadows. Gillian Tett, the Financial Times columnist trained as an anthropologist at Oxford, talks about how there are no bankers in the banks anymore because there's no money to be made in the banks. So they've set up sort of this whole sort of shadow infrastructure. And so even when I talk about exchanges, like this image here from the Irish Stock Exchange, the decommissioned trading floor, something like 90% of all trading every day happens not through exchanges. This is completely unregulated and undocumented. So I would ask you just to imagine the shadows. Okay, I just want to play a short piece of audio. So what you've just been listening to there is actually the Irish Minister of Finance, Michael Noonan. And the rationale for that format, I'll come back to as we continue. But but directly related. So in the evolutionary aftermath of the global economic collapse, and in the absence of sustained critical audiovisual engagement with the central locus of this catastrophic event, the project titled The Market critically addresses the functioning condition of the global stock and commodity markets. And this continues a cycle, as I would see them, of long-term research projects on the predatory context resulting from the migrations and flows of global capital. So within such a context, and it's important to acknowledge, is the notion of globalization. And one way of thinking about globalization today, asserts Saskia Sassen, quote, is as unsettlement of economies, policies, cultures, and imaginations, end quote. Such structural destabilization and overarching context for the cycle of projects invokes a multi-layered, multi-dimensional theoretical image of globalization, of interdependence, fixedness, and fluidity, permanence matched with fragility, liquidity underlining profound precarity and vulnerability, and where within such an ephemeral environment the everyday of the citizen. The condition of precarity and vulnerability as an outcome of the functioning of neoliberal capitalism continues to hold a central research significance. As Arun Apadurai stated in 2000, global capital in its contemporary form is characterized by strategies of predatory mobility across both time and space that have vastly compromised the capacities of actors, I would argue, then citizens, in single locations even to understand, much less anticipate or resist these strategies. Those states vary in how and whether they are mere instruments of global capital, that they have definitely and most certainly been eroded as sites of political, economic and cultural sovereignty. And I would argue, obviously, since the crisis, that has only been amplified. So I mentioned, to jump ahead, the project that was presented here in Montreal, The Breeding Factory. And I just want to reference in terms of thinking about actually where the title for this project came from. This is from a book by Peter Hartz, who was the former chairman of Volkswagen. And he wrote a book in 1996 called The Company That Breeds Every Job Has a Customer. It's an economic management system. Hartz, though, sort of described this process where it follows the pulse beat of the market, the factory that is, and can change over to 6 or 7 days of production overnight. When the production process becomes flexible, then working hours and working conditions must also become flexible, not only on the factory level. The new breeding rhythm must also make headway at the social level, the time rhythm of society, the labour market, the educational system, and the remaining institutions of the welfare state. The target is a breeding factory. So this was the subject of my practice-led PhD, was the Hewlett-Packard complex outside Dublin. And very much it was about thinking about global labour practices, globalised industrial space, and the functioning of global capital. But it was also obviously an allegory for the nation state itself. So Ireland has the has a status of being both the poster child of globalization in terms of our so-called Celtic Tiger, where basically the Republic experienced its industrial revolution, primarily as a base for large, primarily American multinationals, for our hugely favorable tax regime in terms of corporate tax. Some people may know about Apple, Google, now Twitter, etc. It's at 12.5%. In real terms, they probably pay about 2%. But there's all sorts of other things going on. So some people would describe Ireland now, the Republic really is a tax haven. To becoming then the basically the poster child of austerity. So this cover then is the Irish Prime Minister Taoiseach Enda Kenny from Time magazine in 2012 and the Celtic comeback. So somebody who thinks a lot about in terms of visual representation in the context of creating and constructing representations. That's what I do. I don't shoot anything. I don't capture anything. I don't take anything. I construct things. I make things. So thinking about that is very important in terms of how these sort of issues are also visually represented. So again, we're back in Wall Street. This is in March 2012. Ireland is in the midst of the bailout. We have no financial sovereignty. This is around St. Patrick's Day, the national day for Ireland. This is the political and economic elite of the country. This is on the balcony overlooking the New York Stock Exchange. So this is looking on down onto the parquet floor. This is where our Taoiseach, our Prime Minister, basically was ringing the bell to open the markets that morning. So this time Ireland doesn't have access to the markets, so he's ringing the bell to something we don't have access to. So I'm looking at this image and thinking in terms of actually how the nation state now has become commodified, that actually the Irish Republic has now become Ireland Incorporated. And actually, in the same year, the government released a report in which they described the inhabitants of Ireland not as citizens but as consumers. So thinking about actually sort of the roles and of optics and performance, and the other irony when I mentioned the project and its dating is that actually they're looking on a floor which itself is going to become a museum, you know, that it's also, this is the theatrics of it. It actually is, New York Stock Exchange actually isn't on Wall Street in the sort of functioning form. It's in Mahwah in New Jersey, because that's where the computers are that run the cooling systems and so forth that actually run the technology. Some more of those shadows. So as part of that, though, to sort of understand then also sort of the human elements, I always include these pictures of these two gentlemen. These are two hedge fund managers of a very aggressive hedge fund based in California called Franklin Templeton. They hold most of Ireland's debt. They also hold most of Ukraine's debt. So this is also the process of that idea of hedging on countries. The nation state itself becomes a commodity. That means, you know, you make money whether it goes up or goes down. So recently, even in Ukraine with the IMF deal in terms of the bailout of Ukraine, most of that money, 80% of that money, is going to Franklin Templeton. So in the sort of, you know, the ideas are allusions to sort of democracy and sort of the other sort of financial structural realities, also the shadows. To the Financial Times. So as somebody, as part of my research methods in terms of engaging with sort of also the sort of media representations, you become an avid reader of The Economist, of the Financial Times, in terms of sort of understanding, because really this is about understanding, and this is the importance in the context of even the shadows, is to understand the condition and functioning of these structures. Because they really, it defines in terms of experience, in terms of actually how we're expected to function and to operate as human beings. So they've already pulled this data visualization. This is the market page in one of the sections of the Financial Times. You know, and they're very smart people. I said a lot of them have actually been to art college. They've done visual cultural studies and so forth. So what you're looking at here is actually the top, is a visualization of the world. So on the left actually is the United States, if you can see. And beside it actually is Canada. So those two red squares. And then far off the right actually is Japan. Next to it is China. You've got Latin America, Europe. And the different colouring is talking about actually where the exchanges have gone up and down. I'm less interested in that. It's just about actually how this has been visually represented. So these are squares, they're boxes. So boxes lie next to each other in a functional way. That talks actually about actually how the world is now characterized. As far as I can see, this visualization has only lasted a month, because I think they very much realized actually the counter readings of this sort of material, and they've gone back to arrows that go up and down. So it was just really the month of October they seem to have these pages. Okay. So just to basically, also just to contextualize the projects to date, this is a portrait of a young boy in an old part of Dublin where I lived in 1998. And this was kind of the beginnings of the Celtic Tiger. I was returning to art college, having given up my job and career as a social worker. And I talked to my neighbor Kathleen, who talked about her daughter not being able to live in the area for the first of four generations. And now I realize, obviously, this is gentrification. So the cranes appeared on the Dublin skyline, embodying the sort of economic aspirations of a country that's primarily only ever known emigration and as a source of labor. So there was sort of the aspiration that this would be the first generations that would stay. But I started asking questions in terms of thinking about that, just basic, very simple, going out, making pictures, portraits, always at dusk, the child, the crane, and for whom? Who's the development for whose future? More recently, as I've been putting a presentation, I've referenced this in other talks, a son of mine, Jakub, who's now seven, asked, who is this boy? And at the time I said, I didn't get the boy's name, but I realize now he's probably about 19 or 20. And to this point, and that's where as part of the post a child of austerity, you know, 1,500 young people are still leaving Ireland every week. So it's something like one young person every 6 minutes. So again, the sort of actually functioning, that's our safety valve, is our safety valve. So again, actually how sort of the change to a project from 1999 to 2001 that addressed sort of the spaces of development and finance, to the aforementioned breeding factory, the Hewlett-Packard complex, where Mark in 2003, staff clean room supervisor, talked about, you know, it's a fool's economy or a false economy or a fool's paradise. In terms of, so understanding this wasn't about sort of trying to iconicize the portrait, it's critical and central in terms of trying to make something visible. Because actually at the time when you went looking for Hewlett-Packard Ireland, you got an image of the Champs-Élysées in Paris. to a project I undertook in the former East Germany in the Niederlausitz in Brandenburg near the Polish border from 2003 to 2008 that in many ways was looking at the sort of unevenness inherent in globalization that actually, like most of the former East Germany since reunification, has been economically devastated. It's been deindustrialized. So thinking about futures of capital, possible futures of capital, and actually how areas... urban areas in the former East have actually looked like sort of, you know, streets in Dublin, in Athens, in Lisbon, and have done so for the last 20 years. It also problematized an idea of sort of capital having a national identity, because there's a media narrative within Europe at the moment of a German superpower, but actually I would argue capital has no national identity. How am I doing for time? Okay, that's fine. So, this is a photograph by the German-born photographer Andreas Gursky of the Chicago Board of Trade. This became sort of a methodological starting point in terms of the role of the photograph, in terms of representing the market. It also was the introduction to Kathleen Salem's research on traders and technology from NYU from 2010, and her experience when she viewed viewers watching this, looking at this photograph in Tate Modern in London. So Zalim's response to Gursky's photograph forms an introduction to her book, Out of the Pits, Traders and Technology from Chicago to London, and pivotally informs her methodological approach. While understanding the functioning of such an aesthetic, Salim advocates as a priority to move beyond the abstraction of capital, as visually embodied in the Gursky photograph. It's almost that sort of Jackson Pollock sensibility. This is a function capital embraces as a strategy, which impinges transparency, further emphasizing the contemporary context of technological evolutions regarding the labor of traders and the administrative structures surrounding these spheres and their possible future abstraction, which I'll return to later. Therefore, Zalum reasserts a necessity to look closer in greater detail at the apparatus of the global market. Markets are objects of inquiry into the culture and economy of contemporary capitalism. Today, the world's financial centers are the ones that need explanation. The mysteries of the markets touch our lives, but few outside the financial profession understand them. I also want to sort of reference, I think, and I don't have time to go into the work of Karen Ho, who wrote this magnificent ethnography of Wall Street called Liquidated, that happened between 1996 and 2001. That very much talks about the sort of conditions as we understand now and actually how these have only been amplified. So I can only highly recommend that. So in terms of thinking also methodologically, I was also drawn then to the work of Laura Nader, the anthropologist, and her advocation of a critically repatriated anthropology in 1972, where she was a professor of anthropology at Stanford University. So in that, she talked about principally studying the most powerful strata of urban society. And instead of asking why some people are poor, we would ask why other people are so affluent. So then how that affects our role, and I've included today, academics, photographers, artists, writers, researchers, activists. So I don't mean to be prescriptive here, but I think we're in a profound and perilous situation. I thought of Don's assertion yesterday that we're at war, that we need to understand these structures. So somebody comes from a documentary photography background that has a lot of history in terms of documenting the poor, the marginalized, the vulnerable, and that's important. I'm not being critical of those practices. But I also think we need to look at the structures, possibly also laterally, or those that frame that experience. I think it's vital and actually urgent in terms of understanding. And I get also meant to make no claims for having position, only singular position on that, as is witnessed also in presentations we've heard yesterday and this morning. So I make no claims for that, but just in terms of understanding where we find ourselves. So in terms of thinking about power, this also has methodological implications. Nader talks a lot about ideas of citizenship and democracy and how the powerful out of reach and don't want to be studied. I mean, this has obviously changed in terms of how it's choreographed now and orchestrated, so we see images of powerful people but carefully orchestrated. In such a potentially limiting context, the possibility of long-term engagement in the form of, for example, participant observation can be severely hampered. However, Nader argues that such limitations should not define the subject of research and advocates a more multivariant approach, including the use of personal documents, memoirs, chance encounters, discussion, interviews, public relations documents, amongst others. In the context of power, I would assert such limitations regarding access embody significant critical meaning regarding the focus of study. So regarding this particular project, The process of negotiation to either get access to individuals or sites has taken on average about a year and a half. Particular multi-sided access was sought in Dublin as sort of the locus for the project, London in terms of its technological interface and global positioning, Frankfurt is central in terms of the European experience, Addis Ababa is the youngest exchange in the world, which opened in 2008, and Mumbai, which is ongoing. I was hoping to have material from Mumbai, but I got quite ill over the summer and had to cancel that trip. So the methodological implications are also, it requires perseverance, you know. It's very easy to give up, because it's very difficult to access those people. Does that? I hope that makes sense. So it's very easy. It's actually, it can be exhausting and tiring and frustrating. So actually to persevere becomes actually important as a methodological position, as a critical position. So for just to focus here a little bit on the site in Frankfurt, but actually to think about then the limitations and what they also represent. So I had the grateful support of the Department of Foreign Affairs from the Government of Ireland. So this is a letter from the Irish ambassador to Germany to Deutsche Börse in Frankfurt requesting support. The original title of the project was In the Land of the Blind. And they rejected this. And as I only found out later, that this was primarily because they were afraid of how they would be represented. So what became important was to think about actually almost in that sense how each site brought some description to the functioning and understanding of the market. So you may know maybe from these white circles are known as sort of the, this is the floor of what's called the Frankfurt Stock Exchange. This is owned by Deutsche Börse. So they actually refer to this, the television studio. So very much what you see every night on German television, really I would argue is the theatrics, it's the televisual performance of the market, and that actually beyond primarily it's just a monitoring station, that actually the Deutsche Börse itself sits outside in a place called Eschborn outside Frankfurt, which it moved to for tax reasons within Germany. So again, the sort of shift in locations. But again, we go every night, let's go to the Frankfurt Stock Exchange and see how the markets have responded. But what we're getting is just a televisual, it's a simulacrum. The market isn't there, it's elsewhere. So this was important then in the installation, I mean, just a couple of the elements. So in Frankfurt, what it offered was actually that limitation. So what I documented was the paper trail, the emails, the letters, the artifacts of my visits there, and a couple of photographs from the exterior that I made, and then playing silently numerous television reports from the sort of theatrics, the theater of the market itself. Okay, so this is kind of dystopian underbelly. In the sense that this is a report by the British Government of Science Foresight Group from 2012. Basically where it's an expert group, academics, economists, talking about the future of computer trading using things like algorithms. Can I ask, is everybody aware what an algorithm is? Yeah? Okay, good. Let's see how that shifted. Okay, that's good. No, that's important. Because the innovator of this technology is the market. So we're aware of it in other forms. So when the Rothschilds first used homing pigeons, it was to send prices to the market. When they first sent the first cable across the Atlantic, it wasn't to say hello, it was to send market prices. So it's to understand in the context of the image and recreating the image that the innovator, the prime innovator of this technology comes from the market, not necessarily even the military. So within this, they talk about there'll be no human traders within a decade. When I started this project, 40% of trading in the United States was done by this. It's now about 80%, and it's similar figures in Europe. So within this, they talk about the normalization of deviance. Algorithmic trading will replace most human trading in the global markets within a decade. In the same report, the authors state algorithms will eventually be able to self-evolve through the ability to experience, so genetic algorithms. And this is robots. This is artificial intelligence. It's what a robot is, it's an algorithm. Building upon their previous market experiences and therefore requiring no human intervention. However, they also warn that within such a framework there exists the potential for what they describe as the normalization of deviance. Unexpected and risky events come to be seen as even more normal and a disaster occurs. And what I've included down here is Manuel Barroso, who's the former EU Commission President, who talks about the new normal. So I thought a lot about this idea of normalization of deviance and actually how as a process, as a structure, in terms of the inability for most even to understand how these operators work about actually as a process culturally normalizing deviance. Okay, it's sort of, that's an inherent within the system, in the context of that there is only now. So how do you represent something? Because even now, the algorithms actually send out signals, so they're actually, they're in the room. We just can't see or hear them. So as a sort of, in terms of a installation practice, to think about actually represent what we can't just see, but that's so central in terms of the functioning. I have a brother, Ken, who's is a composer, musician, and also writes code for a living. And so what Ken did was he wrote an algorithm, and I downloaded first in Dublin all the speeches of the Irish Minister of Finance, in Belfast the speeches of the British Chancellor of the Exchequer, George Osborne, and in Paris those of Pierre Moscovici. And each time they used the word market, the algorithm identified when they used the word market. And then we turned that sound in terms of into that audio, that data, into the sound that you heard at the beginning. The idea is that somehow or another it sits within an idea of reality. The words have been spoken in a public event like this, but actually it also represents the relationship between the nation state and the functioning of capital. If I can just play briefly. So this is from Pierre Moscovici. The interesting thing about, as part of that Hollande government, is now he is now responsible in the EU Commission. He's got promoted and he's responsible for financial affairs on the EU level. The man who gave him the job also set up Luxembourg as a tax haven. So here in the installation, you can see just on the right-hand side is a spectrogram. So this has already come up yesterday and this morning. So this is a visual representation of actually what you're hearing. But obviously it also plays in the sort of graphs that are used in the market itself. Yeah, that it plays in those sort of things. But actually what you're seeing here is not the market, but the relationship of the nation state to the market in the context of the course of James. Okay. Okay. So a central element within the installation is actually the role of words. So that's what it's become in terms of also recording conversations with particular individuals in different locations. And they become a central point of the installation itself. When I did the work at the Hewlett-Packard complex, the role of vulnerability and precarity was evident. I thought going into the belly of the beast that somehow or another it would be safer, but actually what you realise very quickly is how fear is actually amplified, that it's actually central to the functioning of the market. So here an Irish-born manker that again I met in an outdoor cafe in the city in London talks about how fear is central to how we operate. It pushes everyone to perform. I have to say personally, without that insecurity, I couldn't work, not the way I do. So this is not necessarily about taking, you know, my position. My critical position is in the context of that installation, but it's talking about the complexities of the understanding of the cultural context of that site, of that location. And so even though every transcript was then sent and vetted, where locations were removed in this particular case to a trader and a private trading company, that even other elements then were removed, but they remain in the context of the transcripts, so the silences matter. So here, answering a question about the role of the regulator, it talks into silence. So the power, so the gaps become important. I'm going to have to move on. This is Bethlehem in Addis Ababa. And this is where it's not completely necessarily dystopian, because in the ECX, the Ethiopian Commodity Exchange, set up by members of the Ethiopian diaspora, some who worked on Wall Street, they regulate, they place rules. Okay, so let me just finish with this last little bit. This is part of the installation. A researcher in Chicago in 2010 looked at one stock for one nanosecond and calculated how many global positions were taken on that one stock in that one nanosecond, and he said it was 14,000. And he said if you were to print out that data, it would be a 6-foot stack of A4 paper. So I imagine actually this stack now is probably twice that size. So the idea is, and again in the context of the soundscape, that actually again trying to visualize something that's immaterial and making it material. And on each sheet of paper running through that column is the words from notes of a conversation trying to convince a trader to collaborate on the project. And what he states is, what people don't understand is that what happens in the market is pivotal to their lives, not on the periphery, but slap bang in the middle. Okay, thank you.